Hello, and welcome to the Sounds Right podcast. I'm the host, Laura, and this is episode 2 of the series Nuggets of Language Nerdiness, where I share with you 3 lovely snippets that will help you understand the English language better. Sounds Right is a speech-to-print approach to teaching phonics based on decades of research on the science of reading and learning. For 20 years, we've been delivering our quality teacher training programs. You can find a whole host of information and free resources on our website, linked in the show notes. On with the episode. Have you ever wondered about the etymology and history of place names in English-speaking countries? Many town and city names have similar endings, and each one points to their history and founding. As we know, the Roman occupation of Britain from 43 AD until the early 5th century had a profound influence on the English language. One word that stuck and has developed into a number of different words is the Latin word castrum, meaning fort. It came into Old English as the word castor, and from there came to develop into the word castle. The word's much more far-reaching influence, though, was on the suffixes of place names. Former Roman forts have retained this link to castrum, even today in the form of suffixes like Chester, Castor, and Ster. There are so many examples of this, like Manchester, Leicester, and Lancaster, which were all used by the Romans as military forts. This suffix was taken over by British colonists to Australia and appears in towns like Gloucester in New South Wales and Grantchester in Queensland, and to the US in places such as Rochester, Minnesota, and Eastchester in New York. Though, of course, these were not the sites of old Roman forts. We can learn lots of other things about place names just by understanding their suffixes. The suffix mouth, for example, comes from the Old English word mutha, meaning the mouth of a river. Places like Plymouth, Yarmouth, and Portsmouth in the UK are all cities founded at the mouths of rivers. And many settlements were named after people, so the English town of Ashby de la Zouche, for example, was owned by the La Zouche family, whilst Wolverhampton was named after Lady Wulfruna, who founded the town in 985 AD. The same goes for many Australian towns and cities that were named after colonists. Rubibi in Western Australia was given the name Broome in 1883 after the governor of Western Australia, Sir Frederick Broome. Another example was the city of Brisbane, renamed after the Brisbane River, which in turn was named after the governor of New South Wales, Thomas Brisbane. It's worth looking up the etymology of your own hometown. I looked up mine, and the town I grew up in, which is called Buckingham, actually means the home belonging to Booker. There are some key differences between US English and other varieties of English, but one of the first ones that comes to mind is the difference in spelling. For example, the ISE ending of words like realise, specialise and organise are spelt IZE in US English. Another example is the OUR spelling of the last sound in words like neighbour, colour and flavour, which is just spelt with OR in US English. And the RE spelling in words like centre, metre and litre are spelt ER in the US. But where did these differences come from? As politics manages to weave itself into most things, so it did here too. The political thought surrounding US independence from Britain was a key factor in this divergence from British spelling. I'm sure you'll have heard of Noah Webster, who was really the key figure in cementing these spelling differences. So for Webster, the newly formed USA provided an opportunity for spelling reform. He felt that the English writing system had become riddled with an excessive number of superfluous letters and spellings. He also saw it as an opportunity to deviate from British cultural influence and establish a national language that would in turn bring together a national culture. Of course, that didn't happen, and the US is one of the few countries in the world with no national language. However, Webster's influence on spelling was significant, and his dictionaries were largely responsible for standardising these US spellings of words such as colour, centre, and realise. Finally, I'd like to tell you about the difference between polysemous words and homonyms. Polysemous words are spelt and sound the same, but have multiple related meanings. So, for example, the word dish has multiple related meanings. It could refer to a plate, like put the dish in the sink, or it could refer to a meal, like I ordered a dish I hadn't tried before. They have slightly different meanings depending on the context, but come from the same root word. Incidentally, that root word here is discus from Latin. Polysemous words are not to be confused with homonyms, which are words that are spelt and sound the same, but their definitions are not related to each other and they have different origins or roots. The word bat, for example, is a homonym. It has two completely unrelated meanings, for example, a winged mammal or a bat for playing a sport. Bat, as in the mammal, comes from Middle English baka, coming from Old Swedish, Norse and Danish. And the type of bat we use in sports comes from French, and before that, the Proto-Indo-European word bat, meaning to strike. So what's the difference between the two terms? Both terms describe words that are spelt or sound the same, but homonyms have unrelated meanings and polysemous words have related meanings and come from the same root. It can be sometimes a bit tricky to work out which words are polysemous and which are homonyms, because it can require knowing the root of the word. So here are a few examples of homonyms and polysemy. I'll give you a second or two after each one to try and figure out for yourself whether you think it's a homonym or if it's polysemous before I tell you the answer. Okay, so number one, is the word down polysemous or a homonym in these two examples? I went down the slide. I have a down jacket for winter. The answer is it's a homonym. How about the word paper in these examples? The paper got wet in the rain. I read a paper about a new discovery. Here, the word paper is polysemous. The word to listen out for in these next two sentences is served. So he served a 3-year sentence in prison. He served lunch at the homeless shelter. Here, served is polysemous. And the final example is bark. The tree bark was dark brown. The dog may bark if you come close. Here, bark is a homonym. I'll provide links for those in case you're unclear on the answers, and you'll also be able to find the links to the sources I've used for this whole episode in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. Bye for now!